Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to Tate Modern. I am Gabriela Salgado, the curator of public programs here, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome our speakers today, Lawrence Wiener and John Slice. I will not say more about the event today because Patricia Vickers, who is next to me, the editor of Art Monthly, will talk about the event. But just to say, this is part of a talking art series, which some of you must have come already to. And it's an ongoing series of discussions between artists and critics and writers that we do in collaboration with Art Monthly. So thank you very much for coming. The last announcement I have is that Mr. Porter left his card in the ticketing office. So if you want to recover it, just look for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gabriela. This, as she says, has been an ongoing collaboration with Tate, and we're very proud to have Lawrence Wiener with us here today talking to John Slice, who's a regular contributor to Art Monthly. Lawrence Wiener, he really needs no introduction, but he does tell me that it's his 66th birthday on February the 10th, so a warm happy birthday from all of us. And he lives and wants us to know that he lives in New York and on a houseboat in Amsterdam. But in fact, where he lives is all over the place, because every time I meet Lawrence, he's traveling somewhere, and he's just come back from China and he's going to France. Most artists hate talking about the past, and Lawrence especially hates talking about the past, but that's tough because he's going to have to. You probably don't need to be reminded. Because artists don't like to talk about works that made them famous, but they have to, because it's that moment that they enter our consciousness and change the way we look at art and, dare I say it, at life. And in the 60s, Lawrence was making work, showing first with Seth Sieglab, who's another crucial character in the history of conceptual art, and was recently at an Art Monthly Talking Art panel discussion in Bristol. And since the 60s, he's been showing extremely important work, but what really set the cat among the pigeons was his famous manifesto in 1968, where he wrote, "The artist may construct the piece, the piece may be fabricated, the piece need not be built, each being equal and consistent with the intent of the artist. The decision as to condition rests with the receiver upon the occasion of receivership." When I first read that, it turned my world upside down, and I'm sure I'm not alone. And the ramifications of that are still with us. So I'm sorry I have to refer to it again, Lawrence, but it's your fault. And John Slice has been a regular contributor. He's written several monographs on artists and writes for other magazines, dare I say it, as well as Art Monthly. I hope you'll enjoy the conversation today. The main basis of the talk will be, of course, Lawrence's retrospective at the Whitney, which is traveling to the Mocha in LA. And he has right now a show based on rugby, he tells me, at the Listen Gallery. He played rugby at the age of 14. A more unlikely rugby player is hard to imagine. But I do hope you get to see the show. So thank you very much for coming.
We haven't actually made any noise into the mic yet, so.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Lovely. We should begin our conversation with a kind of disclaimer that if you haven't realized by now already, you can't always trust your mother. And we won't. Many of the things that we might be talking about, or it was announced that we're going to talk about, we probably won't talk about, namely the Whitney retrospective, as far as the eye can see, which is going to close on Lawrence's birthday in New York before traveling to LA, because in the past month you've had to do that 60 times already, and I wouldn't ask you to do it again.
But what are you going to ask me to do?
What I'm going to ask you to do is to talk as much about now as anything, and to talk about the kind of moves that I see coming out of your practice that have to do with dignity, responsibility, and the breaking down of certain structures through the erection of other structures. And I thought we might begin with a line which I realize that you don't remember, but that I either remember or misremember coming from you, which is, we are of our times as we're trying to figure out who we are. And
I thought that was the basic reason for the making of art. The making of art, as far as we know from historical precedent, I guess, is an attempt to find out who you are, where you are, and why you are. And it's just one of the things that people use. But as far as being from our own time, that's exactly the same thing as art only exists when it's made for a public and when the public interacts with it. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it believes it or that it uses it. But if you're standing on a street corner in a major metropolitan city like London, and you've got tall, short, old, young, etc. people, and you all cross the road and the bus doesn't run you over, you're all in the same generation. It's so obvious, and this nonsense about art being, there's the 80s, there's the 70s, there's the 60s, there's the 50s. I entered the art world in the 50s, and now it's 2008. I don't see the conversation. I mean, it's 2008. Are you going to tell me that there's been a hole in time that we've fallen in? Or something?
No, quite
the opposite. No, that's the point.
The point, yeah. The point I was trying to tease out is that
and what the function
we are always of our times if we engage with them. But
we've also, if you've been lucky enough to sort of survive, I come from a generation that really entered in the 50s, and if you remember the people that were supportive of me, surprisingly, and very nice, were like de Kooning Klein, that group of people, Chamberlain, almost like the older artists, all died in their 40s and things. Nobody really lived very long. I never thought I'd make it past 35, 40, and I wasn't being romantic. There was a joke when I was a kid that if you didn't show by the time you were 24, you may as well forget it because you're not going to get your 11 years. And I don't know, but this is 2008, and in 2008 we have to discover what the purpose of art is. It's become an industry. It's become a national football team, practically. There are artists roaming around the world, which seems to be the necessity now in order to be able to make anything, wearing baseball jackets or football jackets or rugby jackets that have national colors on them. This was not what it was all about to begin with, and it wasn't what it was all about for me.
But isn't that what you would refer to or have referred to as the ambience that the marketplace injects into that?
The marketplace, everybody wants to pick on the marketplace, and I did an interview recently, and they were saying, oh, this artist said that you were, you know, a great, you know, like something for them or whatever it was, and they're making multi-million dollars, and I was sitting there, and it was not being cute. I said, Jesus, that's a great idea. I hope it takes. Artists should get paid for what they do. I don't understand. The market can make your life comfortable. It can make your life uncomfortable. But in fact, it cannot make your work enter into the world. Mm. In no way, manner, or form. So the market's not at fault. And since art is one of those things, and artists are the last people that don't have certificates, the selling price of a work of art has very little to do with its function within the world. Because even in its rejection, it's put out in the world. And the work that I tried to design was work that even